we were, if you're looking at the page Taf Yud Zayin, we were talking about dentistry last time. And the Rama had said, Misha Choshesh Bishinav Umitzta'er Alav Lahotziyo. If someone has a toothache, and it's a lot of, he's in great pain, he wants to have it removed, Omer Le'ino Yehudi Lahotziyo, so he could tell a non-Jew to remove it. So in Note Yud Gimel, at the bottom, he said, Umitzta'er Alav Lahotziyo. He's in great pain, he wants it removed. Even though we've already explained that the illness of the teeth is called an internal illness, and therefore that should justify having a Jew do it. The reason why the Rama says, I want you to go to a non-Jew for it, is because this is not what we call a known cure. And we've said that you violate Shabbos only for known cures. Pulling the tooth is not, he says, a known cure. Now, it's a little bit more complex than that. In footnote 163, he refers you to the Mishnah Berurah who says it. But you have to see the comment from the Tzitz Eliezer, of Eliezer Waldenberg. So if you take a look at the side sheet in Source Aleph, I brought you the pertinent piece from Rav Waldenberg on this. He says, "Ubiyisod ha'iser shel hotzas shein b'Shabbos." Regarding this issue of not pulling a tooth on Shabbos, "Kosev ha'mishnah brura be'er halacha lishdos narga b'mashakasa v'zeh ha'magen avram b'siv katan gimel da'atzas shein malacha da'oraisa da'achova l'refua." He says the Mishnah Berurah challenges, literally throws an axe into or a hatchet into the position of the Magen Avram. The position of the Magen Avram is that pulling a tooth is a violation of biblical law, because you are wounding when you pull out the tooth, and you're doing it for the purpose of healing, and therefore it's not a destructive act, and therefore you're violating biblical law. And therefore the Magen Avram wishes to say that you're liable biblically for pulling a tooth. Even if we normally say that wounding someone in a destructive way does not carry biblical liability because it's a destructive act, this isn't destructive, this is repair. Yeah.
Can you just explain why a destructive act is not?
Yes. The general rule is that malacha only carries biblical liability if you're doing it with the method of and the purpose of the way it was done in the Mishkan. So the classic example is you digging a hole. There's a difference between digging a hole for the sake of storing something in it and digging a hole because you want the dirt. In the Mishkan, they dug a hole for storage. So if you dig a hole in order to get the dirt, you're not biblically liable. You're rabbinically liable. So similarly, we have a principle that the actions that were done in the Mishkan were by definition constructive, because whatever their purpose was, we call constructive. So we talk about, you know, tearing a stitch in order to sew more, as opposed to tearing in a destructive way. And the idea is that if you're going to say that someone who wounds in a destructive way is not called wounding under the biblical parameters of malacha, even still, in this case, the wounding that you're doing is constructive, because it's for medical purposes. You're trying to heal the person. So therefore, he says you would be liable. That's what the Magen Avram said. And that's the easy part.
You would be liable to Rabbanan.
You'd be liable biblically, because you're doing it for the purpose of healing. What he's saying is it's not the case that's destructive, it's the case that's constructive. We're in Source Aleph on the side sheet.
Is that one of the malachas?
Well, it is. Wounding is one of the malachas. Just only if you do it in a constructive way.
Which malachas is that wounding?
Chovel, so there's discussion in the Gemara as to whether Chovel is an issue of Tzoveya, because you cause bleeding in the skin, or whether it's Netilas Neshama, whether it is an element of killing. It's just killing on a smaller scale by causing bleeding. I believe those are the two positions. I haven't looked at it in a long time, but I believe those are the two positions laid out in the Gemara. So the end of the second line, that was the Magen Avram's position, that if you pull a tooth, you're going to be liable for biblical malacha. V'alzeh me'ir ha-Mishnah Berurah. Regarding this, the Mishnah Berurah challenges. Deha hu eino mechavein rak lahotzi ashein. V'adam memela ka'asi. He says, all the guy wants to do is pull out the tooth. He's not intending to wound. If wounding is defined as spilling blood, you don't care whether there's blood or not. You just want to pull the tooth out. That's a side effect. Hadam memela ka'asi. That's a side effect. V'af dehavei psik reisha. And even if you'll tell me, well, it's a guaranteed side effect. You pull a tooth, the person's going to bleed. Hahavi al kopanim psik reisha delo ichbaslei. It is a psik reisha that you're not interested in. You have no desire whatsoever to cause bleeding. And therefore, veini suro elamid rabbanon. It's only a rabbinic prohibition. You follow? Mishnah Berurah challenges the Magen Avraham and says, pulling a tooth is fundamentally rabbinically prohibited, not biblically prohibited, because the bleeding is an indirect result. Granted that it's guaranteed it'll happen, nonetheless, it's not something you want. You have no interest in having them bleed. Ulamanda Amar Mekalkal Bachabura Chayav, and if you take the view, there is such a view, that by definition wounding somebody is harmful, destructive, and therefore that's considered a normal act of wounding, even when it's destructive, and therefore you're liable. Gambazeh Chayav, then you'll be liable here, biblically. Kmoshkazav Agra. But according to the view that you are indeed exempt from liability if you wound in a destructive way, why should a person be liable biblically for pulling a tooth? That's the Mishnah Berurah's argument. And therefore he concludes, so he says, even though if you're going to have a Jew do it, then you're right, you should really be careful and not do this unless you have some danger involved or whatever it is, because it is, after all, rabbinically prohibited. You can have a non-Jew do it. Asking a non-Jew to do it is only itself. Amira la'akum is rabbinic, and you're asking him to do something that's only rabbinically prohibited. So therefore, you don't need the person to be entirely ill in order to justify pulling the tooth. That's the Mishnah Berurah's position. Baram, however, he continues, we're in the second paragraph now in Aleph. Baram, however, Ra'isi Baruch HaSholchan B'Tzi'if Chav Gimel Shekosev L'chayev Ba'akiras Shein Mishum Av Malacha Da'okir Davar Migidu Lo. The Aruch HaSholchan says, this isn't necessarily a problem of wounding. You may be right. Wounding here is only rabbinic as an issue. However, there's a separate problem. I am not allowed to cut a plant from its source of growth on Shabbos. That's a biblical prohibition. It's called kotzer. Right? So I can't go out into the field and cut wheat. I can't pull up blades of grass. And I'm not allowed to then uproot a tooth. Because a tooth was growing from the body, so to speak, and now you are pulling it. Granted, it doesn't grow in the sense that we think of it, but it's being nourished by it. If a tooth isn't being nourished, it dies. So maybe I'm liable for that. V'im nomar d'achiyuv hu amna mishum kach. So he says, if you're going to tell me that's what you're liable for in pulling a tooth, that it's for uprooting a tooth from the place where it was growing, and if you'll say that that's what the Magen Avraham had in mind, that the Mishnah Berurah misunderstood the Magen Avraham. He thought the Magen Avraham was talking wounding. But in fact, the Magen Avraham was talking about the problem of uprooting something from the source of its growth. Then, Hare Yored Mimela Hasagas HaMishnah Berurah Al Magen Avraham Bazeh. Then the Mishnah Berurah's challenge to the Magen Avraham disappears. Dare Be'emes Mechavin Hu Lo Tzas Hashem, because he is intending to pull the tooth out from the place where it was nourished. Unless you're talking about a dead tooth, a gangrenous tooth. Ubezeh Gufa Hare Munach HaChiyuv. And that's where the liability would lie. V'lachein Shaper Kosev HaMagen Avraham DeChayev. And therefore it makes sense when the Magen Avraham says that one will be liable. So in terms of defining what the malacha is when you pull a tooth, if you take it as chovel, it may only be rabbinic. But if you take it as uprooting something from the source of its growth, it could indeed be biblical.
You could even say it's borer.
You're selecting borer. The tooth from among the others. That's an interesting idea.
Either way, it's another
yeah. Well, that would be one question, and this is a question with ramifications elsewhere. If you have a line of objects, each are discrete, I mean, they're right next to each other, but they're either discrete entities, and you can clearly identify each one, and I pull one out, is that called borer? That's number one. And that has ramifications if I want to get a glass out of the cabinet. But number two, It's an interesting question because you are selecting the one that you want, so to speak. This is the one I want. On the other hand, I want it in order to throw it out. Right? So the person with the peas and carrots on the plate and says, well, I'm going to take out the carrots because I really want the peas.
It's like the watermelon pit.
Or the watermelon pit. Although the watermelon pit has an extra element of being muktzah inherently, potentially, because it has no use.
Oh.
So you have the watermelon pit, although you would argue the tooth is also muktzah. It's worthy of discussion. Okay.
One question. When we say av melacha to oker davar megidula, does this mean he really does not mean the thing itself? I mean, all he wants to do is eliminate it from its place of the growth. So he's not really the melacha shenaschal gufa.
Right, except that it's not because. Oh, and you're going to argue. That's an interesting.
Normally, when you pull a plant, you need the plant itself.
Right, unless you're going to go back to the point that he made earlier, which is that because it's for refuah, it's automatically constructive. Because it's for healing, it's automatically constructive.
But I mean, he's using the principle of Okel Davar Megidula Lo, and I would think simply Okel Davar Megidula Lo, that the source of the prohibition is really because you need it, not because you don't.
Right. In other words, you're not even talking mekaka versus not mekaka. You're saying it's malacha shenitzricha legufa, because normally, like I gave two examples before of uprooting something. One was you go to the field and cut wheat. The other is you pull up some blades of grass. But the truth of the matter is, if I have no desire to have the blades of grass, you might be able to argue it's not really. It's like the person who digs the hole for the dirt, as opposed to digging the hole to store something in it. That it's really a fundamentally different act. And not liable biblically. It's an interesting question. I'd have to look into it. It's an interesting thought, though. Maybe I'll get a chance to take a look into that. Back in the Nishmas Avram, we're still in Sif Katan Yud Gimel. He says the reason why we don't want a Jew pulling the tooth is because pulling a tooth, he says, is not a known treatment. However, he then says, ulam, however, ha'idna, nowadays, ha'tzaas ha'shein hi refuah yidua. Pulling a tooth is a known cure. Umuteres afilo ha'idei rofa yisrael, and therefore even a Jewish doctor would be allowed to do this on Shabbos, kishu koveh shezeh rechi mishum sakanas tefashos, assuming that he decided that this was a life and death situation. Because, and in the footnote 164, he notes that Rav Neuwirth supported that idea. And then he says, Rav Shlomo Zalman wrote to me, Choshvani, I think, to bizmanenu muter afilum zerak safek hatzala. I think that nowadays it actually would be permitted, even if you're not sure that that's the way to save the person. Why? Kevan de bizmanenu ein shum sakana ba'akiras shein. Because today there's no danger in pulling a tooth. You do that all the time. What in the world is he talking about? So take a look at source Beis on your side sheets. From the Isser Beheter HaAroch. Source Beis. This is a Rishon. And he mentions a separate consideration when it comes to pulling teeth. He says, V'chein hiter morenu harzrach yazal, I think it's harzrach yazal, lislosh shein al yedei akum b'shavas. He permitted pulling a tooth via a non-Jew on Shabbos. Because, as he said earlier in his discussion, if you have someone who's ill but not dangerously so you tell a non-Jew and he does the malacha. Because the prohibition, the rabbinic prohibition against having a non-Jew do malacha for you on Shabbos won't apply because the person's in pain. But if the issue is danger, not alleviation of pain, as I added in brackets, that's my addition, but it's a danger issue, then lekala memer, then you won't say, have him pull the tooth. Why? De'adarabba t'lishas shein havi sakana kedi isalelis. It's just the opposite. Pulling a tooth is dangerous. Why? Maybe because of the state of the potential septic state that you could bring about if it's not properly cleaned. So maybe they have problems in which people would pull a tooth and infection would ensue. So he has a completely separate problem, which frankly isn't a Shabbos problem. It's a weekday problem. Don't pull teeth because you could actually harm your patient by doing so. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, you know, that hasn't been an issue in a while. And therefore, I would justify doing this, even if you don't know for sure that it's going to actually cure the patient, even if it's a maybe, because one of their considerations, one of the reasons that they gave for not wanting to do this, had nothing to do with uprooting something or wounding or anything. It had to do with not wanting to pull teeth in general. Okay, that's all carryover from what we did however many weeks ago it was that we last met. Now, we have a new issue we need to discuss. The Rama said that if a person has tooth pain and you want to remove it, you tell a non-Jew to do it. So here, in note Yud Dalet in the Nishmas Avram, he introduces a very important topic, which we discussed in a shir at some point. And that is the topic of Misayeya, helping somebody do something inappropriate on Shabbos. In particular, this fellow who is going to get his tooth pulled is going to be told what by the dentist? What is the dentist going to say to him when pulling the tooth? Open wide, shift this way, shift that way, say, whatever it is that the dentist is going to say in order to create a position of the mouth which will enable the dentist to pull the tooth. And so the question is he actually allowed to do that? He's helping the dentist. This is what we call misayeya, aiding somebody in doing something that isn't supposed to happen on Shabbos. So we need to see two Gemaras, source Gimel and source Dalet. We did this in a shir, I think, on medical care on Yom Tov, was where this came up. Ameimar shari lemikhol eina minochri b'shavsa, a treatment they used to have for people's eyes. They would treat the eye with a kind of alcohol-based dye. Ameimar said, you're allowed to have a non-Jewish doctor apply this to your eye on Shabbos. So Amar le Rav Ashi la Ameimar. Rav Ashi protests to Ameimar. He says, what do you think you're doing? My daitach. He says, what is your opinion here? On what grounds do you permit this? Is it because the Amar Ula braid Rabbi Eloi, Ula said, Ula, the son of Rabbi Eloi, said, call Sarche Chola Osinai de Nachri b'Shabbos, that he said, well, you could have a non-Jew take care of a patient on Shabbos. The Amar Rav Hamnuna called Dover Shein Bo Sakana Omer Lenachri v'Osen. Rav Hamnuna said, if it's not something that saves a life, it's not something that will eliminate danger, then have a non-Jew do it. So you think that this is in that category? That permission is specifically where you are not performing an act to assist. But you are helping. You're opening and closing your eye in a way that will enable him to apply this this medication. So he said, Ameimar says back to him, yeah, Rav Zvid agrees with you. V'shani lei, but I answered him, misayeya ein bo mamash. Assisting is not considered substantive. For me to open and close my eye is not considered a substantive assistance, and therefore, it's permissible. So if I stop with that Gemara from Beitza that we just saw in Source Gimel, the answer to our question is, don't worry about saying for the dentist, because misayaya in bomamash, that's not called substantive assistance such that you'd have a problem doing that on Shabbos. But of course, there's always another Gemara. So take a look at Source Dalet, a Gemara in Makos. This is dealing with the issue of cutting the hair, we call it the sideburns, but it's basically anything below the line that you form going horizontally around the temples. This is called Hakafas Peos Harosh, cutting the corners of one's head. The Torah says, Lo Sakifu Pa'as Roshchem, you shall not cut the corners of your head, which we understand to mean you can't get a haircut that goes straight across, and because it's in a pasuk that talks about beards, the Gemara says this is talking about males specifically, because normally beards go with men, even though that's not 100% true. Not all males have beards, and not all females don't have beards. Nonetheless, the rule is that men are not allowed to cut their hair cutting evenly all the way around so that they drop the hair below that line. Got it? That's Hakafas Peos HaRosh. So, the question then arises, what if a non-Jew does it? I go to a non-Jewish barber, and he cuts my hair, and he cut the peos. So is that my problem? So the person who cuts the hair is called the makif. The person whose hair is cut is called the nikaf.
allowed him to do it willingly?
Yeah, let's say I did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so
let's say
then it. Then if they take, you know, sometimes that happens, if they take too many cuts and you're left with it.
Right. I'm not talking about accidental. I went to him and I said, you see that picture? I want to look like that.
Okay.
So, Tani Tana Kamed Rav Chisda in Source Dalet. Someone taught in front of Rav Chisda. Oh, sure. Sure, sure, sure. I wasn't sure if you were late for class or early for mincha. 1 second. Okay, here, 1 second. I have to give you... Oh, good. Good, good. Well, then here. Not at all. Dr. Feldman, show her what we're up to? Thank you. The Tani Tana Kamed Rav Chisda. So, it was taught in front of Rav Chisda. Echad HaMakif VeEchad HaNikaf Loke. The person who cuts the hair and the person whose hair is cut, both of them are going to be liable. So we're assuming, obviously, that the person who's cutting the hair is Jewish, because otherwise he has no liability. So both the barber is liable, and the person getting his hair cut is liable. So Amar Lei, Rav Chisda says back to him, what's he liable for? Manda achil tamri ba'arbala. I added it in brackets, kolomar bisal. Lucky. He says, tell me, if a person is eating figs, actually, tamarim, dates. If a person is eating dates out of a basket, is he liable? Meaning, you didn't do anything. If you're sitting in the barber chair and somebody cuts your hair, what's your liability? You didn't do anything. You might as well have been sitting there eating dates. The Omar Lachmani, he said, who told you that there's liability? Rava Omer, b'makif la'atzmo v'divrei akol. So Rava explained, it's not talking about makif v'nikaf, where there is a barber and there is a barbie, if you will. Enough, that's how they came up with the name. Rather, what we're talking about is where someone cuts his own hair. Then you're liable, because you cut it yourself. And then everybody will agree that there's liability. Rav Ashi gives us a different explanation. Rav Ashi Omer b'misayeya. Rav Ashi says, no, you're helping him. Because the barber says, turn your head this way. And you do. So you are assisting v'divrei akol, and everybody will agree that you are then liable.
Why don't you just call it an assisting she'in bo mamash?
So that's exactly the question. That's exactly the question. The Gemara in Beitza, source Gimel, concluded assisting is insignificant. The Gemara in Makos, in source Dalid, seems to say that assisting is significant. So now you understand why we have a problem. Yes? What do you mean?
Maybe in the context of having a haircut, the sayyah is
the type of
sayyah. But I mean, to get a tooth out, I mean, can I say that if the dentist is pulling a tooth out and I move my mouth like 1 centimeter to the right, I really help him?
So we're not ready for the tooth yet.
No.
Right. We can't.
We have the eye drop, so we have the eye drop.
We can't handle the tooth yet, so to speak. We first need to address the question of Beitza versus Makos, right? Hair versus eyes. And once we've addressed that, we can try to apply it to the tooth. So, look at source Hay, please, on the side sheet. This is from the Rabbah, Rabbi Moshe Isserles, and is what we just saw, actually, in the Nishmas Avram. He said, if you have a toothache and you're in pain, you want it removed, Omer le'inu Yehudi la'otzio, so you tell a non-Jew to please remove it. On that, the Taz comments in source Vav on this issue, on this idea that you have to ask the non-Jew. He says, "Dekashen ha-gemaros ahadadi." He says the two Gemaras that we presented in Gimel and Dalet seem to contradict each other. "Dekevan de-misayaya in bomamash," since assisting is nothing, then "Eyanikav chayav," then the person getting his hair cut in "Benikav chayav malchus," he should not be liable for lashes. But in "On Maisel malchus," you're not getting lashes unless you do something. "Velora inu betosos uaposkim sheyesh chilukim bazeh." We haven't seen any distinction in the various classical commentators to explain this. "Umistamat ravayu hilchasaninu," and it seems that both Gemaras, Gimel and Dalet, are accepted as a law. In other words, don't answer. You're right, there's a contradiction, but it's okay because we hold like Gimel, or we hold like Dalet. No, both of them are actually upheld as law. So therefore he says, in the second line in source above, after the three dots, after the ellipsis, he says, we have to distinguish and say, Amemar's case with the eyes, lo avid shum maiseh. You didn't really do anything by opening and closing your eyes. Because your eyes are already open. He's helping a little bit when this fellow is doing the malacha, but it's not that big a change. Since all you are really needed to do is assist in a minor way, that's not substantive. He says, maybe the answer is, in the I case, it's not substantive. As opposed to the case of the haircut, where before the guy can begin to cut, you have to sit down in the chair and turn your head in such a way that he'll be able to cut.
Well, you also have to lie down and tilt your head so they can put the eye drops in.
Exactly, so we have to come back to this. But that's his answer, he's suggesting. It's as though you started the work by presenting your hair for cutting, and that is substantive. That's the Taz's attempt to solve the problem. The Tur's code of law indeed says that the reason why you're liable in the hair case is because you turn your head. The in cane, so now the Taz tries to apply that to the tooth case. He says, "Vim Kane, if so, Hachinami Bazeh." The same thing is going to be true in the dentist case. Sheposeach piv va'ose maisa kodem la'akum. You open up your mouth and do something before the non-Jew can do anything, because kistam adam piv sagur tamid. Because the default position is for your mouth to be closed, and that really seems to be the key point for him: is what's a person's default position? Your eyes by default are open. Your hair, by default, is not presented for cutting. I don't know if he's suggesting that you actually go like this to pull the hair out for cutting. You're actually drawing the hair out. Maybe that's why. That's not the natural position of the hair. As opposed to the eye, which is naturally open. And the mouth, he says, is naturally closed. He doesn't know the people I know. But he says the mouth is naturally closed. You open it if you want to eat or something. He says, that's why you would not be allowed to do this, because it's like the haircut case. That's the position of the Taz. Now, before you jump on the Taz, understand that if you look down at source Ches on this sheet, you will see five different explanations for the distinction between the hair case and the eye case. We're on number one, the position of the Taz. We can have other approaches. But look back now, please, at the sheet that has Taf Yud Zayin at the top. Back in at the bottom of the page, where it says, the big letters Yud Dalid, Omer, Misayeya. The Nishma Savram says, Re'ei B'Taz, look at the Taz. Shekosev, he writes, She'im ha'akum yachol asos gam b'li siyua shel ha'Yisrael. If the non-Jew could do this without the assistance of the Jew, Azmuter, it will be allowed. Shebaze omer misayeya in bomamash, because then we say that assisting is not substantive. That is the first approach. The first approach, indeed, is that the difference between the eye and the hair is how great of an assistance you offer, and according to this, the tooth will be usur. You cannot do the tooth unless you would somehow be able to do it without assisting him. So the tooth would then be a problem. However, this is not the only explanation for the distinction between the two cases. We now continue on the flip side where it says Taf Yud Ches V'Achacham Tzvi V'Hamaharsham Matirim Siyua Rak B'Isurei D'Rabbanan. They argue that the issue is whether your prohibition that you're concerned about is biblical or rabbinic. Meaning, the eye case was Yom Tov. Medical care on Yom Tov is fundamentally only rabbinically prohibited. Therefore, it was allowed. Whereas, the case of cutting the hair is a biblical prohibition. Therefore, it was not allowed. And then, the question regarding the tooth will depend on whether we said that it's a biblical prohibition to pull a tooth, or a rabbinic prohibition to pull a tooth. If it's biblical, then you'll say, you won't be allowed to. If it's rabbinic, then we'll say that it will be allowed, and your aid is not a problem. So that's what's going to determine, according to this view. Follow? Third view. And this is the most complicated of the views. Let's see if we can get through this one. This goes back to the point that he made about the assistance that is before the deed versus the assistance that is during the deed. Okay? In the I case, you're helping him while he is engaged in the act. Well, let me not jump the gun on that, because I'm going to get it wrong if I do that. Let's take a look at the Nishmas Avram himself. The third line. V'kosev hashut Rabbi Akiva Eger, v'zel Lashono. He quotes Rabbi Akiva Eger writing in the 18th century. He says, we're on the fourth line on the page that says Taf Yud Chet at the top.
Fourth line.
The fourth line. He says, Ha'emet, Milishna de Rashi Makos Chafam Ebeiz Dibur Maschol B'Mesayeyah. He says, look at what Rashi says in that Gemara in Makos regarding the haircut. Mazmin Saros Lahakif. Rashi wrote that what you are doing is preparing your hair for him to cut it. It really sounds like you're going like this to pull the hair out. Right, like this, for those listening to the audio. So he says, Mashmaktas Shemazmin Saro Kodem Hahakafa. Rashi sounds like he's saying that what you're doing in the haircut case is actually preparing the hair beforehand. Ubiyoser Nishma Kain, and it especially sounds like that. Deha Ritva Sviro Lekach Bekavanas Rashi. The Ritva thought that that was Rashi, what Rashi meant. I brought you the Ritva in source number 7, but in the interest of time, I'm going to skip reading it in the inside. You will just read it in the Nishma Savram. Mima Dehiksha al Rashi Hanal, because the Ritva challenged Rashi. Me'ayi debeitza, the Misayeya in Bomamush. He challenged Rashi. Rashi said that preparing the hair is asur, right? And he said, well, then why is it that when it came to the eye, it was allowed? That was what the Ritva asked. V'im nefarish didavka b'sha'as giluach mamash airi. But if you're going to tell me that in the hair case, you are helping specifically at the time when he's cutting it, you're holding the hair out, which I think is the way you have to explain this. If it was really going on at the same time, and that was where it's prohibited, then there would be no challenge from the Yom Tov case, because there you open your eye for him to put in the stuff. That's before the transgression. Rabbi Akiva Eger says that Rashi seems to understand that in the haircut case, you are helping during the deed, and that's where we say it's asur. And in the eye case, you're helping beforehand by putting your head and your eye in the right position. And that's why it's mutter. Because you didn't help during the prohibition. And that's why the Ritva specifically cited Rashi's language. And that's why he made sure to mention Rashi's language, because Rashi said that you're preparing the hair in advance. You could have said that it was something that was that it was actually, I'm sorry, you could have said, if not for Rashi, that the eye case is during the deed. Make sure I get this right. No, he says, "Hainu bishas giluach mamash materosho shia giluach tov biyoser." That in the haircut case, you're doing it during the haircut in order to make it to make your hair more cuttable. Okay, which he now says inclining the head rather than pulling out the hair. That's what I would have said if I didn't have Rashi. And that Rashi, as the Ritva understands it, is saying, no, with the hair, you're doing something before the deed. And that's what leads the Ritva to ask his question, because he says the eye case is before, and it's mutter. And you're saying the hair case is before, and it's usur. That's the way the Ritva records the question against Rashi. Now, it's really not the Ritva's own question. It's the Ritva quoting others who challenge. But the point that emerges from this, if you didn't follow the whole back and forth, is this. The Ritva understands Rashi to be saying that the hair case involves aiding in advance, and the eye case involves aiding in advance, and that one is usur and one is mutter, and that's why he's asking his question, why is one prohibited and one permitted, if they're both the same circumstance. The point, though, that we want to draw from this, in general, is that that Rashi seems to indicate that the help that you're giving in the hair case is beforehand. And Rabbi Akiva Eger says, I don't accept that. All of this is Rabbi Akiva Eger quoting Rashi and explaining Rashi's view to set it up for a disagreement. And now he writes, we are now a dozen lines up from the bottom or so. Ach, Mikomakam lo avin demonalize. Rabbi Kiva Egger says, I don't understand. Where did Rashi get the idea that it should be prohibited to help before the deed takes place? Why should we say that it's called an action that is an action that is prohibited if you're helping before the actual deed? When the deed is done, you're not doing anything. There was no deed, and therefore you shouldn't be getting lashes. He says, when you tilt your head, that isn't the start of shaving off the hair. It's not the start of the sin. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva Eiger takes the position that you're not going to be liable. The view of Rabbi Akiva Eiger is, if your assistance is prior, then you're not going to be liable. So what he ends up saying then is that the tooth is going to be allowed, because the assistance you provide for the pulling of the tooth is before he pulls the tooth. Right? You open your mouth in position, then he goes in and extracts the tooth. Granted, you're keeping it open, but that's just maintenance. That's not an action. And therefore, the tooth is going to be will be mutter, according to Rabbi Akiva Eger's argument. So it all comes down to how I understand these Gemaras. When people ask the question sometimes, why do you spend so much time learning Gemara? This is why. Because the way you resolve Makos versus Beitza is going to determine practically whether you can pull a tooth on Shabbos or not. That's what it comes down to. So continuing in the Nishmas Avram. Sorry? Oh, I didn't get to a conclusion. We have a lot to go. We're not getting this done for another 2 weeks. So hold off on the toothache. So he says, V'hachi mashmo lishna da'ataz, and he says the taz, in fact, sounds that way, not in our discussion here, but in a separate discussion. There's a very interesting problem. The practice is that women who are going to go to mikvah cut their nails. They are, rather than worry there might be dirt stuck underneath their nails, they tend to cut their nails. So what happens if a woman is supposed to go to mikvah Friday night, and Shabbos starts, and she realizes she didn't cut her nails? Now what does she do? One option would be, just try to clean really well underneath. Another option would be, try to remove them in an unusual way, perhaps. A third option is, you go to your non-Jewish neighbor, and you explain, I need some help cutting my nails. So, without going into what the halacha is, the Taz raises this point regarding having the non-Jew do the nails. He says, this is what the language of the Taz sounds like also, that if you help in advance, you're okay. The Taz said, don't go to a non-Jew to do it, because he says, it's impossible that you won't incline your finger to help as she tries to cut your nails. He said, why didn't the Taz say the simple thing, which is, you're going to have to extend your finger in the first place? Why did he talk about inclining it during? You have to present your fingers. And the answer is, Elamashma dizeh lo hayamaisa. The answer is that this, aiding in advance, doesn't count as a deed. But during the cutting of the nail, gamken hi mata umekari vetzba'a, then she also inclines her finger, and that's where the problem would come in, because it's during the deed. Akal l'shono, end of quote from the Taz. Vayim v'taz u'b'shach, and see the Taz and the Shach. So the three answers we've given so far, we have two more to go, which we'll have to see next time. But the three answers we've given so far to distinguish between these two Gemaras will lead to different results regarding the tooth. Right? The position of the Taz is, was this the default position, or did you do something substantive that enabled him to help? And then in the tooth case, we'll say usser, prohibited to pull the tooth, because the default position of the mouth is to be closed. Second possibility is, it depends on whether the core prohibition is biblical or rabbinic. And that then leads us to the question of whether pulling a tooth in general is biblical or rabbinic, which we spent the beginning of the shiur on. And then the third approach is, are you helping before the deed or during the deed? In the case of pulling the tooth, you're helping before the deed. And therefore, you would be allowed to have him do it. All of this is about having a non-Jew do it. This isn't about having a Jew do it. But having a non-Jew do it, you would not be considered to be misayaya. You would not be considered to be assisting, because the assistance you provide is really before the deed, and then you just maintain the position that you were in before. We still have two more explanations to see. Next week, God willing, instead of this, we have one of the larger sessions. It'll be starting at 7:40 with Mincha, followed by the Shir itself. It'll be on dementia care. And then, God willing, we'll resume here in 2 weeks, and I think that will be the last week until after the summer.